Open it to the floor to the first question on the front row, the gentleman on my right.
Well, I'm probably here, and I've been a plant breeder since 1964, which seems an awful long time.
Yes.
And I have never had occasion to approve of plant patents. I have never had an occasion to approve of plant breeders' rights, and I think they're wholly antagonistic to progress. I have to agree with everything we've been said, and the message is correct. The messenger has done a wonderful job. But my question, which is what I have to come to, is, having heard what you say, fully supporting everything you say and that goes behind it, how do you get the people who are even more powerful than Monsanto to agree? How do you get to the people, if they exist, who hold more power than the chairman of corporations?
Shall we take two questions and we might deal, or do you want to deal with
one? I think maybe deal individually then. Question. I think that the greatest power in our country is the consumers. And I think what happened that why we were fortunate in Canada that consumers really became aware is about 5 years ago, the mainline churches in Canada got together and said this is a moral and ethical issue also, the patents on life, the control of the seed supply, the future life. So each November, in all our churches in Canada, a bulletin is released about the dangers of GMO, the patents on life, the rights of farmers being taken, and so on. So the power lies in the consumer, in the knowledge, you know, that they know what is happening. Now, I was a former politician, a member of the provincial parliament. Laws are made by politicians, and pressure has to be put on the politicians, which we are doing now in Canada, to change the laws, bring the laws to protect life, and eventually, believe me, it's going to be changed in Canada. And so I met yesterday, or the day before, I can't remember anymore, members of Parliament here in England, from the Labour Party, from the Conservative Party, from the Liberal Party. And I have to say it was a very good meeting with all these members, because they had a good grasp all about GMOs, and they had done a lot of research, or the AIDS had done a lot of research. The power is in the people, and people can put that pressure on the politician. I often have said that people don't really appreciate or understand the power of a letter to a politician. When I was in government, if I got one or two letters on a certain issue, it was one or two letters. But if I start getting 50, 100, 200 letters on a certain issue, believe me, it was brought up in caucus. So never underestimate the power of a letter to a politician. Not a form letter, just a simple written letter, a sentence or two is all that is needed. So that's what I would suggest.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Hey, you've just been on one subject about the racing. When you go in such as the flow of a gene being put into wheat and grass to create nitrogen, what would you say on that?
Could you repeat? It's whether a gene that is put into a wheat crop with nitrogen. You don't have to give it nitrogen is within it. Is that not a good thing, essentially?
Okay. Yeah. See, what we're doing here, we're doing in genetic engineering or genetic modification, whatever you want to call it, you're doing something that nature never does. You're not taking a higher life form from one life form and transferring it by genetic manipulation to another life form. Nature never does that, and that's what makes it so different. Now, having said that, you can never transfer a gene from one life form or another by itself. You have to use what we call promoters or vectors, and in the case of canola or rapeseed, you have to use an antibiotic-resistant marker gene. So besides eating a gene that makes that plant resistant to a certain chemical, in this case Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, you're also eating a new virus or a new agrobacteria or in the case of rapeseed, an antibiotic resistant mercury that was never in your food before. So it's totally different than what you're referring to compare it. We have a total different area. Now, I did not mention, while we're on the subject of transfer of genes, I did not mention in my presentation that another very big concern in North America is now we have plants producing prescription drugs. There are 6 major drugs produced in North America now by GMO plants. And believe me, this is done in the open, or as we say, in the wild. So it's bad enough for us to eat a food with GMOs in, but we now could be eating foods with prescription-type drugs in our food, and that has become really a concern. We think it was absolutely criminal that the American and the Canadian governments have allowed that. But they originally were sold on the idea you wouldn't have cross-pollination, it wouldn't spread, and now it has come home to roost. It has been spreading. 6 major drugs, there's more than that, and there's plastic, are growth hormones, industrial enzymes, blood thinners, blood cloggers, contraceptive drugs are being produced by plants now in North America in the open. I was at a meeting in California not too long ago, and a doctor that has done a lot of research on what we call pharma plants. And he gave examples of what was happening. He said, if you have had surgery and you come home and then eat a food laced with a blood thinner, what will the results be? He gave another example. If a woman is pregnant and then she eats a food with a contraceptive drug in, what will the results be? And that's why we're demanding labeling now, especially when we found out what they're doing, what has been all released into the environment with no control.
So what you say is a good thing that way, but is a bad thing that way, a good thing?
Is there a bad thing? I think the question is GM always bad?
Well, at the present time, we don't know what may happen in the future if they would get drought-resistant plants or certain things like that. But scientists in Canada tell me if all work was geared to make a plant drought-resistant, it would at least be 25 years from now, because it's more than just transferring a gene. You have to total restructure the whole plant to do that. So it's pretty easy for a company to say, we will have drought-resistant, we'll have that and that. It's a lot different than just transferring a gene to make that plant resistant to a chemical. So when you go into drought-resistant and all that, you then totally restructure it. They have to restructure that plant. I should also mention that what we have found in North America and in Canada, that the ability of a plant to take all the nutrients of the soil that it should do is restricted with that transfer of the gene and the new virus and the new bacteria that's in the plant, because you have altered the structure of that plant.
Yes, very briefly, nitrogen fixation is probably the holy grail for breeders, unless your name's Growhow and you're a fertilizer producer, of course. But I think the truth is that this is part of the Jam Today promise that is GM. There are claims made, often dubious claims made, particularly by the scientific community, actually, and then the biotech companies have to go around and tidy up afterwards, that these marvelous traits can be achieved in a very short time span. I would suggest that after 15 years, we can look back at the history of GM that we've seen. We've seen these promises made. We've seen the failure to deliver on those promises, for whatever reason, whether it's commercial, legal, or even just too damn difficult to achieve. And then we ought to really start saying, is there another way that we might start to address these things? GM is not the only tool in the box. There are many other tools we can go to. But at the minute, we seem to have this fixation on GM when trying to address really important issues like nutritional enhancement, nitrogen fixation, drought tolerance, and saline tolerance.
I don't want to make too much of a matter of discord, but these discussions have been going back well before anyone started talking about organic crops, well before anyone started talking about GM crops. It goes back to the original patents on streptomycin. It goes back a very long way. It goes back 30, 40 years, this argument. And I think it's a much more fundamental argument. As a matter of fact, the GM issue is brought to a head. But the issue, in fact, is about the power of very large corporations motivated by greed to control everybody else and put everybody else out of business and make all the profit for themselves. This is a very, very central ethical issue of sheer greed and financial greed, and it goes back far further. And the GMO certainly brings it to the surface, but it's much, much weaker.
Good point, sir. Any other questions on my left? Can I take the gentleman at the back?
Yes, interesting question.
Your name, sir?
Peter Robinson, very interesting question, yeah. I'm not interested in the legal side of this, because I wonder whether that's been exploited to its best effect. We've had this whole issue over Microsoft recently dominating the world. Are there not the equivalent of the antitrust laws in Canada, where Monsanto's size and power within the market might raise eyebrows, so you could actually try and get them broken up because they have too much power? Has this avenue been approached at all or not?
The power of antitrust laws, you know, the monopoly control of a particular area or particular part of a market, does Canada not have those checks and balances to stop Monsanto?
We used to have that, but since deregulation came into being, a lot of the laws basically we are saying are now written by the corporation. Now, I'll give an example on that. All the information first of all, the Canadian government, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is supposed to test any new product that comes on the market, especially food, they did not do one bit of testing on GMOs. They only used the data supplied to them by Monsanto. And when that became known at my trial, you can imagine the uproar. Now, the Japanese School of Science have taken all that data supplied to the Canadian government by Monsanto about the safety of GMOs and did the complete research over in Japan and a report back to the Health Ministry of Japan, and they said all the documentation supplied to the Canadian government by Monsanto was fraudulent and falsified. That documentation now has been resubmitted back to the Canadian government, and at this time yet we have not heard back from them. So, you know, the power of corporations, and I'm not ashamed to say it, we were subject just a lot, like some of the other countries, to campaign funds and so on in elections, and it's happened by us. And as I said before, we never thought a lot of these things would happen in our country, and it has. I hope I've answered.
Are you satisfied with that?
Well,
it seems to be
that there are no strong anti-monopoly laws operationally in Canada.
No. We used to have the Combines Act law and all that. That's all by the wayside.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Gentlemen at the front, your name.
I'm Eric Barnum. You know, well, most of you here, like, associated with the agricultural industry in general. They're all from, like, different backgrounds. Well, anyway, I'm a designer, an architect, almost an architect. And my question to you would be, do you think there's more sort of fundamental problems here, like, wrong with, like, maybe the legal system, i.e. common law, human rights? I mean, like, the guy who took the sample off your land was, to me, an act against common law for civil trespass, getting him down to the company Monsanto. They don't have a duty of care, as I do as a professional, to research their product before it goes onto the, you know, the common market. They don't have a duty of care responsibility to make sure this product is not harmful. You know, is there no way that they can be sort of found guilty or negligent as such, if you like?
Well, okay, so basically, maybe you should repeat the rest of the question.
The core of the question is about what other laws were infringed. Trespass, for instance, common law, and the other, what it's similar to the previous question of what regulatory framework is there. In the health service, we have NICE, who check the drugs before they go onto the market to see their impact. There are a series of peer-reviewed tests done before medication is given to
humans.
Is that not the same?
A corporation like that that's full of professionals can be allowed to get away with it, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I'm sorry, it wasn't very clear the way I structured my question.
Okay, I'll address some of that. First of all, Trespassing in Canada is illegal, as in many other countries in the world. But if you, if a farmer catches Monsanto's police or Monsanto's representatives in his field and say, you're trespassing, get out, you're violating my rights, yeah. Monsanto will say to the farmer, make me get out of your field.
Yeah.
And the farmer will say, I'll take you to court, and Monsanto says, go right ahead, lay a charge, but you won't have a problem by the time you're through with you. And I had a young farmer that was very upset. He was threatening, he found Monsanto's police in his field, and he phoned me. I immediately came out to his field, and I was able to get a picture of Monsanto's genes in his field. And then the young farmer said, I want to lay a charge. I took him to the police station, and the sergeant said, I want to advise you that if you lay a charge, they're going to fight you, and you're going to be in court for a long time. You have to make that decision. And when people hear what it has cost me and other farmers to stand up for Monsanto, they just capitulate. Now, human rights. I think more of the issues come under human rights. We have drastic violations, first of all, because we don't know what's in our food. That's a drastic violation of human rights, because we all should know what's in our food. Secondly, it's a drastic violation of academic freedom, because so much of our research now in Canada is funded by the corporations at our universities, research stations, and so on, and the funding is no longer coming from the public purse. That has to go back to public purse. A scientist's job is to bring that information to the people, and that's why his funding should come, as I said, from the public purse. Drastic violation of human rights, farmers' human rights being taken away. So what my wife and I did, it took a lot of work. We took Canada as being charged, and we took Canada for human rights violation to the United Nations Human Rights Commission in Geneva. Canada at the present time is charged with drastic violations of human rights and some of the issues I just mentioned, plus others. Canada has not responded yet to the human rights charges. How can Canada now say to other countries of the world, like China, your violation of human rights? We better start cleaning up our own act in Canada. So we tried to bring as far as we could all the legal implications we thought was possible.
Gentlemen, my mother, Nick Ward, farmer. Firstly, you've obviously had a lot of experience with Monsanto. I know that here, at one stage, Agrivo were looking to develop Liberty Link, which was the group, wasn't they, ammonia-resistant trait.
Didn't that just say?
Agrivo, another company, were looking to develop the Liberty Link range of herbicide-tolerant crops here. Is there any other company in Canada currently supplying GM seed or GM crops, GM licenses, and are their conditions as onerous as Monsanto's? Or is it just Monsanto that are as bad as you portrayed?
Can you repeat me?
Are there other companies who are as aggressive as Monsanto? That's essentially.
Well, essentially, is there a choice?
If you want to grow GMOs, you can go. There's many other varieties. Some of the more important varieties are Liberty Links or Soothsmart and so on from different companies. But they permit the farmer to use his seed the following year. You cannot sell it to another farmer or a brown bag or whatever. You want to use it on his own land if he's raised it from his own land. Because of that, Monsanto does not want that you always have to buy the seed from year to year. Monsanto is the only company also to charge a license fee. Monsanto is the only one that really has this aggressive policy of investigators and so on that I know in Canada. So they've taken a really aggressive attitude to control farmers and get control of the seed supply. Now there was a reason for that. About 7 years ago, Monsanto's patent on Roundup herbicide expired in both our countries. And Monsanto's Roundup herbicide was the flagship of profit-making for Monsanto Corporation. And to maintain their sales of their herbicide Roundup, they went then to get control of the seed supply. Where you buy the seed, you have to use Monsanto's herbicide Roundup. And that's why they become so aggressive to
control that sale of seed to farmers. Now, in, I'll give an example. In Canada, we do have a federal law that states that you can never patent a seed or a plant. And the Chief Justice of Canada, of the Supreme Court, was very angry when her fellow judges ruled 5-4 in favor of Monsanto, because she said, you're now allowing something indirectly that you did not allow directly. Now, this is what happened. 2 years before my case went to court, Harvard University came to the patent office in Canada and wanted to patent a mouse. We call it the uncommon mouse case, where they said they invented the mouse because they had put a gene in that mouse to make it more suitable for cancer research. The patent office refused to give Harvard University a patent that they invented the mouse. That went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled, no, you cannot patent the mouse. Immediately after my case, Harvard University came back to the patent office in Canada and said, we want a patent on the gene that is in that mouse. They got the patent on the mouse, they now have ownership of the mouse, and they can own and control the mouse now.
I think part of the point is, are you hinting that other farmers must be quite content?
If they're sort of moving away from Monsanto, I know it comes down to the commercial aspect of it, the Roundup is the preferential trait, and glufosinate is probably not as appealing. But are farmers drifting away from Monsanto now? Surely it's not.
A lot of people do not agree with the contracts itself, and if they want to grow GMO canola, they'll go to another company. So I say, but having said that, is that if a farmer grows canola, or wants to grow rapeseed, he no longer has a choice. No matter what company he buys it from, it's all is contaminated with GMO. We were sitting on a mountain of GMO rapeseed in Canada up to last year. And the way they're getting rid of it is now we cannot sell it. We only have about 3 customers left in the world, and we're the biggest world producer of rapeseed, is to now make biodiesel from it. So what does that do to the future world food supply if you're using good, productive land that produces food now to make biodiesel? So that's something else to look at.
Yeah, just please.
Nick, I think it'd be a huge mistake to try and infer that other companies may be less strenuous at defending their intellectual property rights than Monsanto. Other companies have demonstrated that they are more than willing to deal very strongly with farmers where they think any kind of infringement has occurred. They're all the same. And if they see Monsanto getting away with it, they'll only use that as an example as to how the sort of trading terms that they think they can adopt.
Lady here, and this gentleman, and then you.
Isabel Wright, a simple question, I think, compared to some of the others, and maybe I'm confused, but I'm trying to understand why our farmers are continuing to choose to grow GM rape in Canada if there's a 5% yield reduction, more expensive chemical costs. Have I missed a crucial part?
That question comes up continuously. What they do a lot of times is on crop rotation. If they're growing, and then sometimes they look at the price, like last year the price of the rapeseed became very high when they started using it for biodiesel.
And the land
is contaminated anyway, and they cannot raise. And sometimes it's primarily in crop rotation. I would say that our production of canola or rapeseed in Canada has gone down considerably. Our farmers switching to pulse crops, and because it's very expensive to grow a GMO crop. And there is a switch away, but some farmers, due to rotation or whatever, will grow it. But the production, as I said, has certainly gone down, and I think we're rid of most of our surplus, but it went to biodiesel.
Gentlemen here.
Thank you.
Edward
Gray,
I'm
a farmer. I just happen to have a law degree as well. My undergraduate dissertation on legal liability issues on GM crops. just addressing on to other things you said, Canadian common law is extremely, virtually the same as our own, I'm persuasive in our courts. American common law is very similar as well, but not persuasive in our courts, but similar nevertheless. There is a difference between, I didn't realise the culture in Canada was quite the same as it is in America, where you often hear a very litigious American society, people suing companies, authorities, whatever, for millions of dollars for the most trivial little injury, which is probably not the fault of whoever's being sued anyway. However, people are frightened of being taken to court or having to take to court big corporations. That fear is not so prevalent here, thank God. I hope it never is. The thing is also, I believe if you are losing your livelihood, your land, or whatever, there's amongst British farmers, I know, I am one, we are more likely to say, well, sod you, I will take you to court, and if it does bankrupt me, so be it, but I will have my day in court, because this is an important thing. This is more prevalent in British society. Quite often people have to be advised by solicitors that it may cost them £30,000 or £40,000 to try and get the extra half an inch of driveway from my neighbour, and they might not win. That's not worth fighting for. But when it is your livelihood, when it is your 100 acres, your 500 acres, whatever, people and farmers are likely to do this. Furthermore, the contracts that Monsanto are doing, farmers here will just take one look and say, go away, to put it below. And I just don't believe it. The other thing is that there was a question earlier about leguminous wheat. I think I was at the same meeting where that was suggested by Sam Bellwether. But leguminous wheat is a fairly serious bit of tinkering around with DNA. I know, for example, a few years ago, 1998-99, corn borer resistance gene put into corn in America. The corn suddenly, for no apparent reason, was a lot more susceptible to various funguses. That they found out basically there was the stem became more brittle, more likely to crack, let more of the fungus in. That was not a very big side effect, not a very powerful side effect, although you would have possibly saved on insecticide, spend a bit more on fungicide. But it was unforeseen. That's the fear that I have. It's unforeseen. If you start doing very radical things by really making grass plants, cereals into legumes, which are broadleaf plants, that's a big thing. What is likely to happen? That is frightening to me. And this matter of the corn borer thing, it was reported in the November 1999 edition of New Scientist. I think I know a little bit about it. I quoted it in my dissertation.
Did you get a good grade?
Pardon?
Did you get a good grade?
I never finished it.
Well done for it. Thank you.
But I think...
You're essentially confirming what Percy's saying.
Yeah, but I think that the UK farmers are far less likely to be bound by...
Well, that's an interesting theory. You want to talk to the vegetable sector in Lincolnshire. They are often hamstrung by all sorts of
contracts because it's trade. But well, we'll wait and see, won't we?
It is an absolutely fascinating associated to this whole debate, the farmer's attitude and why they actually get involved in the first place. And it really is rather strange. I mean, do they just want to play with a new toy that's appeared in the box and it's all got a nice bright shiny wrap and they've got to rip it open and play with the damn thing and be damned for the consequences? Or do they actually believe that this is something that's going to benefit them so much that they're willing to take that risk? I honestly don't understand what that is, but I don't believe that Canadian farmers are any more stupid than English farmers, or any more likely to take unnecessary risks. And so why Canadian farmers, American farmers, Brazilian farmers, Argentinian farmers should take these risks, and we should assume that British farmers won't, I have no idea.
There's a gentleman there, very keen.
Dr. Farr. You mentioned that after the canola crop had been grown, GMO canola crop had been grown, the soil becomes infected. Is that in the organic matter? And if so, we might that rot down eventually?
You've often mentioned that the soil is contaminated. Yeah. How is it contaminated?
Okay, especially in an oilseed crop, there's no problem for canola seed to lie dormant for 10 years. And then soil conditions and weather conditions are right, it will germinate. It's something very similar. It's an oilseed crop similar to wild oats, which can lie in the soil for many, many years. And that's why you may think that you have it eliminated, and one single little canola seed can reduce a plant all the way from 4,000 to 10,000 seeds. And that's why it can get so out of control in a matter of a year or 2 years. So that's why we say, if you have a canola crop, you can have canola coming from that crop for many, many years afterwards because of the canola's ability to stay dormant and for many years because it's an oil-based crop.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why when the judge ruled that the soil was contaminated with GMOs or your seeds are contaminated with GMOs, a farmer ought to or should know and pray. I don't know how I can tell one canola plant from another without doing a DNA testing. The seeds look identical. How do I know, or how do you know as a farmer, if you have GMOs in your soil or in your seed supply? There is no way of knowing.
Okay. Any other questions?
I should like to know, when you're transporting seeds around the world, like they do on boats, what's to stop an individual seed getting into a boat, being left in the boat and getting into another country?
It's about how do you stop, really? I mean, GM soil, GM wheat, GM, yeah, and it gets in the export system. Cargills are in close association with Monsanto. They have grain elevators all over the world. They don't pressure wash every ship. That's your point, really.
I did see in Brazil, actually someone asked me to go to Brazil and asked me if I wanted to look at the GMO-free soy supply in Brazil. And obviously I went because they offered me a free ticket. And when I turned up at this company called Incopo, which is a Brazilian-owned company, and supplies about 2.5 million tons of GM-free soy into Europe, I was absolutely amazed at the system they'd got there. The first thing was about a 4-mile stretch of lorries parked on this dual carriageway, running up to the gate into the plant. On the gate going to the plant was a huge sign in Brazilian English said no GMOs beyond this point. And every lorry was strip tested, it's a $5 test. Each truck's carrying about 50 tons, they put two bulkers together and drag it with one unit. $5 test for the 50 tons. Anything that show it traceable, they're not interested in whether that's 0.9%, 0.1%, whatever it is. If it's traceable, it went straight up the road to another facility that they didn't export from. The trucks then went into the plant, a proper test is done, the kind of testing we're used to in this country, and samples are taken. The whole day's intake, all those trucks parked up on that roadway, that is held separate for the day. Overnight, an independent certifying company comes in this case called CertID. They test every single sample.
if anything is detectable, again, they're not interested in percentages. If it's detectable, the whole day's supply is shifted away and sent for domestic use. And that is how Brazil now, even though in Paraná State, where I am, up to about 30% of the soy being grown there is GM soy. That is why Incopa consistently supply into Europe soya at below 0.1% guaranteed. And they're happy to meet that guarantee. They are saying that in 5 years' time they may have to increase that to 0.3%. But today, right now, with just with soya, we're not talking about rape and other plants that cross-pollinate over bigger distances, but with soya they're doing it today. What's interesting is our farmers here in Europe, and we think we're better than Brazilian farmers, we're going to the European Commission and we're saying we can only manage 0.9%. In fact, our seed companies are saying they can barely do 0.9% on the seed that's supplied to the farm. That leaves absolutely no leeway for the farmer, the chain, the processor, anyone else to make any contamination. We're saying we're 9 times worse than Brazilian farmers. More importantly, if you're a buyer, a supermarket, then you've got the two options. One, a product from Brazil, guaranteed 0.1%. One, a product from Europe, guaranteed 0.9%. And you're thinking, I've got to put this on the shelf at below 0.9% to ensure I don't break the law and upset my customers and get bad PR. Which product do you buy? The Brazilian product.
Another point. The Japanese have always bought a lot of canola from us. They don't raise much canola or rapeseed in Japan. But the last time I was in Japan, you can go 30 kilometers from about from 8 or 9 of the ports and you'll see yellow flowers blooming along the roadside. The Japanese are very concerned about their market garden crops because of the cross-pollination from canola or rapeseed into their market garden crops. And the last time I went, they wanted all the documentation that I could bring them from the University of Manitoba at Winnipeg that has done all that research in Canada on the cross-pollination in that brassica family, that they're concerned about the cross-pollination into their market garden crops of GMOs.
So is it too late? Is it too late?
They feel not. They feel that, you know, it's, if they can hold it or eliminate it, basically what's happened, South Korea and Japan have warned Canada now that they will not accept any more GMO canola. But wait, that's all we got.
Gentlemen.
Yeah. Dave Wilde, the growing whisper from the Colmar Stock. Can I just ask about Monsanto standing in Canada and North America at the moment then? The picture you painted of them today is not very rosy. I am assuming they still will sell seed to growers and sell the product Roundup to growers.
What's their standing? Monsanto's standing in Canada. Just assume they're still there and they're still selling and they're still selling the Roundup.
Okay, the last court case, Monsanto's representative or public relations officer, a lady by the name of Trish Jordan from Winnipeg, where Monsanto has its Canadian headquarters, said, we're not concerned about public opinion. We're just concerned about making money for our shareholders. That's exactly what she said to the press. So the National Farmers Union of Canada has said this. If a farmer is going to use chemicals, do not buy them from Monsanto. So there is that anti-GMO, or anti-Monsanto campaign. They are saying to the white, or what, the gray-haired people, if you have stocks or shares in Monsanto, unload them. Many, a lot of people will do it now anyway with the financial crisis. So that's where it stands now.
Sorry, I missed you earlier.
It's okay. You've obviously been doing a lot of research on Monsanto, and I was aware in the past their relationship in the USA to the US administration was somewhat incestuous. It was described as a revolving door policy with people going into leaving Monsanto, supposedly leaving their jobs in Monsanto, getting jobs in the US administration, writing legislation which affected agriculture and the biotech industry, and then getting jobs back in Monsanto. Is there similar situation happening in Canada with the government?
Yeah, you're quite right. There's been a number of occasions where what we call, as you said, the revolving door, where they work for Monsanto, whether it's as legal counsel or lawyers or research people, then going to the government departments, then coming back to Monsanto once they got what they wanted out of the government. Yes, very much so. Plus campaign contributions. I should also mention that in the new agricultural policy for Iraq under Bremer, and you probably know that they only can buy GMO seeds to seed. Now we have almost a cradle of civilization where the Iraqis now are forced to use GMO seeds.
The revolving door, though, is not only in North America, I'm afraid. We've got it here in Whitehall and in Europe with proponents of various technologies, not just biotechnology, but being brought in either as independent experts, supposedly, or actually right into the machinery of government itself.
The last Secretary of Agriculture in the United States, Ann Veneman, who comes from California, she was also a lawyer for one of Monsanto's companies, and then she became the Agricultural Secretary for the United States. So you can see the influence that corporations have in government.
Do you have any examples of the European
Well, it's pretty well known that lobbyists in Brussels for the EU of good cost, the good and the not so good, are constantly in conversation with MEPs. It's how the wheels of politics works in Whitehall and Brussels, and the NFU and the CLA and the TFA, all the farming representative bodies are there too. It's interesting looking at the story of New Zealand and the farming unions in New Zealand, and how when they got rid of their subsidy payments, now the farming union supported it for years and years and years and years and years and years and years, and years. And then there was a switch. And I know it's all about power and control, and we've seen it with the banks in the recent weeks. How do you control this massive monolith of power in our global systems? And we were talking over lunch about how do you regulate this? How do you regulate corporations who have combined profits greater than the combined wealth of GDPs of a number of poorer countries? So Cargill's made £844 billion in turnover. £844 billion. That's bigger than some of the figures we've been hearing about the banks. So we don't hear about this corporate food issue, but who controls it? And I think what we were sharing over tea was, you know, we do not have a global regulatory body. And yeah, the swing door mechanism is not helpful. So, and then any more questions? Indicate if you want a question, and we'll draw to the close.
Well, I'm just going to say, Donald Rumsfeld, chief exec at Monsanto, was really very well.
Donald Rumsfeld, was he a chief exec of Monsanto?
And Mickey, what do you call him? So I should say we shouldn't only look at governments. If I go back to North America, the American Farm Bureau is primarily funded by Monsanto. The Canadian Seed Growers Association gets huge operating grants from Monsanto. So you have to look at even some of your own farm organizations. Where is their funding come? And a lot of times all you have to do is go on the internet and just put in the company or the organization, and it's really surprising how much of these organizations get their funding from corporations like Monsanto. So it's not only government.
Right, I'm going to say one more question.
It's a short one to finish. Do you think in the present financial turmoil all around the world that there's any chance that the issue of the balance between the public good and private profit may change?
You know, you really brought up a good point. There's a lot of discussion going on now is that situations like Monsanto and they control the seed supply, that people now are more not trusting corporations anymore. And I think it's going to have a backlash. We really feel now that if we're ever going to have opposition to GMOs is really going to get strong now, and we'll get to corporations.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being here, and I'm sure you'd like me to say thank you to Peter for arranging this evening, but equally and especially to Percy and his lovely wife for sharing what they want to share with us, and we have to make of it what we will. So let's show a great round of appreciation.